Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the newly named 4F Review Podcast. I'm Shay.
I'm Eric.
And we've changed the name of Eric and Shay Watch Movies because Eric says it's not good enough.
Well, I don't think it's very good.
Plus,
I don't think that, like, having our names be in the search of stuff is good. Like, that's part of it, too.
Yeah, I don't want anyone searching my name. They'll come up with some really unsavory stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, and you especially.
We'll keep that buried. You know, that's how the internet works, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, once we get really popular, no one will ever be able to dig up anything about our sordid pasts. So today we watched The Princess Bride as part of the 4F Review Podcast experience.
We got here because professional wrestlers in movies are good things.
We watched They Live, we watched The Mummy Returns, and we watched The Princess Bride, each one better than the last.
Although, wait.
Well, actually, that's not the case whatsoever. The middle was a
giant black hole. That's only true if the middle is a giant black hole.
Well, I don't know. Did you like The Princess Bride more than They Live? As someone who has not seen the whole movie continuously, is that correct?
This is a similar phenomenon to when we discussed Jaws earlier on a previous episode. I believe episode 3.
Go back and listen.
Where it's a film I was mostly exposed to, like with cable television and just catching it here and there. And you might pick it up, like you might catch it like real early in the film, but you don't quite catch it all. Like I remember a little bit of Princess Buttercup being kidnapped before the poison scene with Wallace Shawn, but other than that, I'm not sure that I had seen the whole thing.
There are a lot of really iconic scenes and moments in this movie that we could point to. I do think it's interesting that this movie is a little bit front-loaded. I have seen the entire thing before, so I knew what was coming. But I didn't find myself thinking, like, oh, here comes this part, like, as often in the second half of the movie as I did the first half, where the Wesley character is having his, you know, battle of steel, battle of strength, battle of wits with the three, you know, kidnappers of Buttercup. Each of those set pieces is incredibly iconic in its own way, and each of the actors featured over the course of the movie is really like an ensemble cast. We talked about this during the film. Like, they all do such a good job pulling this story together, where no one really feels like the main standout character. They all have their, like, little separate bits to play.
And they all have, like, a functional role, so to speak. Andre the Giant is there because he's big and he's strong. Inigo Montoya, so he's the swordsman who's on a quest of revenge, you know. And everybody has their little bit to play in the whole tale, and it all weaves together really satisfactorily.
It's a very almost paint-by-numbers kind of fantasy story, right? There's nothing that this movie does that is particularly surprising, I guess, from like a storytelling perspective, but it's all done so well that it can be looked at as maybe one of the best examples of a kind of a kid's fantasy movie.
Yeah. This is definitely like, for my age group, I was like 6 when this came out in theaters, but like I said, I came to it later. Maybe we saw it on videotape previous, but yeah, this was one of those films that got like culturally ubiquitous within my age group, plus or minus 5 years, where we were all exposed to this. And there's quotable lines, there's action and stuff.
There's romance. There's kissing.
It's just all the stuff that just all fits together, and especially when you're in that adolescent age range, where it just hits all the beats in a simple but satisfying way that, you know, leaves everybody, like, it's everybody in the whole family can enjoy it. Yeah, it's a great example of filmmaking all around.
Yeah, like it's almost hard to even categorize it because, and the studios that picked this movie up didn't know what to do with it. They kind of marketed it as like this zany, family-friendly comedy, which it kind of is, but it's not really a comedy. And in a lot of ways, it sort of defies genre expectations. Because it's not purely fantasy. It's not purely a romantic comedy. It's not purely a comedy. There's elements of a lot of different types of films in this, and the influences. I don't know what the influences of this movie are. Rob Reiner's like he's a classically trained filmmaker and everything. But like what inspired the story in the first place was actually a book, right? It was written by William Goldman, and Reiner was just slated to direct it. But
yeah,
he just did such a good job bringing all those elements together.
I'm sure Rob Reiner came across the source material at some point and figured that he could adapt it, but trying to come up with what is the film you're going to make out of this, because it is a little bit offbeat in terms of genre. What kind of film is this? I mean, yeah, it's a romance, but it's a comedy. But yeah, it's a little bit hard to put your finger on. So I could understand why it didn't, it was successful, but it was a modest success at the box office, but it definitely gained its cultural place much more after the fact.
It has legs for a movie. Yes. The fact that we're sitting here talking about it as still this incredibly relevant film today, like nearly 40 years after it was made, is pretty impressive, just because it doesn't feel like it's aged at all.
No.
Except
some
for
of the things.
Fred,
hey,
Savage is older.
Yeah, Fred Savage is older.
Peter Falk has passed away.
Unfortunately. And we don't get a CGI giant rat. We get a dude in a costume, which is way better. But that does date it, technically.
It dates it, but also you don't look at it and think, oh, that's old. You look at it and you think, this is the vibe of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, if this movie was made today, they'd probably use a guy in a costume.
Oh, absolutely. They should, certainly. It lends to it feeling kind of like a play.
Yes.
And especially with the whole narration element of the grandfather and grandson.
There's also a lot of physical acting in this, which I think you could probably attribute to it feeling somewhat play-like, because if you go to the theater and you watch a play, a lot of people are sitting far enough away from the stage that the actors know they need to be big with their presentation of the role that they're performing.
Yeah, and now that you're saying that, I can kind of connect that to what we were speaking earlier as to the ensemble. The performances as a whole are more theatrical than I feel used to in most films.
How many characters in this movie can you look at and say they were selected not necessarily for their acting chops, but for the vibe that they would bring to the character that they were portraying?
Oh, there's a ton.
Because every single one of these characters looks exactly like the character that they are supposed to be playing. Like, they have the look nailed perfectly.
Yeah.
The person they keep referring to as the giant, his stage name is literally Andre the Giant. Like, you cannot get better than that. You cannot do better for a Spaniard swashbuckling swordsman than this guy who looks like he could have played Zorro in a different role,
Yeah.
And the only thing that I would change is Wesley's horrible mustache.
it is really, really bad.
It is an outlaw-esque mustache.
Now, that is the mustache of the Dread Private Roberts. So perhaps he's supposed to have a scumbag's mustache.
I mean, just because your ancestors are pirates doesn't mean you have to take out after them in every way.
Well, I mean, but we know that the Dread Private Roberts is all, kind of a guise. He's not actually taking after his ancestors. So, it's all about appearance and stuff like that. So maybe he decided to have a truly awful mustache just to add to the sense of menace that he had.
when I see an awful mustache, I don't think, oh, that guy looks really threatening. I think, hey, maybe, you know, maybe take a look.
I do think stay away from me. I mean, I do feel that about, you know, a mustache like that. So I do feel like there is some of that quality.
Is this the most traditionally attractive pairing of lead man and lead woman in a film between Robin Wright, yes, thank you, and the other guy whose name I've also forgotten,
Cary Elwes,
which we are probably mispronouncing.
I believe it is.
A lot of British actors.
Yes. Let's look at the attractiveness list as well as just like the soft lighting type of thing and all that. They're very idealized in terms of their physical appearance and how they're presented. So yes, they're really high on that index. But I mean, you know, there is, you know, there's Cary Grant and Hootsuwitz and Casablanca and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, but there's contenders out there. It's high up on the list.
Most attractive pair have created the greatest kiss of all time as rated by an unnamed ranking system.
Yeah, yes, top five.
Said there have been five that were great. There are top five. This blew them all away, is what Grandpa said.
Yeah, I like that that kind of ridiculous formulation at the end, because it is kind of infantile or juvenile.
A lot of those types of hand waving moments though, where they're like, wait a second, what about this? And it's like, well, it doesn't matter. Let's just move on.
Yeah. It, because ultimately these things don't matter, but also like, this is a story for kids and stuff like that. So
you don't need to know the mechanics of how the torture device that takes 1 year of your life off at a time is like, don't crank it up to 50. It's like, well, why wouldn't you want to crank it up to 50? If you're really trying to torture this guy, if you're really trying to take years off his life, if you really want to kill him, you should have it as high as it'll go and forget the torture part of it.
Yeah, well, I believe Christopher Guest's character was he was interested in the science aspect behind torture, you know.
He should have said this one goes to 11 when referring to the torture machine.
Well, it did go to 11. It went way past 11.
Exactly. He finally got to realize his dream of turning it all the way up to 50.
Although it wasn't as satisfying as it could have been because he died.
Well, yeah. But what, did you expect him to just transform into an 80-year-old man and that was him for the rest of the movie?
Well, no. No, I don't think it doesn't transform you. It sucks the life out of you. So that's a little bit different.
Okay. It's hard to parse the scientific knowledge of the time versus the scientific knowledge of today.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's interesting to be discussing this movie in these terms because, yes, we really liked They Live. Yes, we really liked Jaws. I feel like we've mostly only watched movies that we haven't really enjoyed very much.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we get these occasional moments where it's like, how do you articulate everything you liked about it? Essentially a perfect movie in 25 to 35 minutes, like we've tried to do.
Yeah.
Like, what else can we talk about? What else should we talk about? We could take a quick break and do my homework assignment from last episode where I said, hey, make sure to come up with some questions to ask me about the Mummy Returns.
Can you name one character from the Mummy Returns?
The mummy.
No, that was not
Imhotep was his name.
No, that doesn't count.
That doesn't count.
I meant to have the codicil of that you can't name one of the people
except
that's from history
Imhotep.
Because Imhotep or Nefertiti, that was also mentioned.
I would not have gotten there. Let's see. The Scorpion King, does that count? He doesn't really
have
a name.
That's not. I thought he did have a name.
Well, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I can't
see.
Think of...
Yeah, it was a trick question. Yeah. Nobody really has any name. There aren't any actual characters.
I was talking with some buddies of mine about The Mummy Returns, and I said, did you guys see this movie? They're slightly younger than you. So that, I mean, they were definitely like of the target age for that movie when it came out. They both had seen it. I said, what did you think of it? They're like, oh, it was great. And I was like, really? What did you like about it? They're like, well, and they couldn't tell me a damn thing about that movie. They couldn't tell me a thing about it.
What they remember is that they probably went on a date and it went well afterwards, and they like,
there is
enjoyed
no chance that date
popcorn.
Went well afterwards.
Hey,
with that movie,
how do you know, man? They might have really identified with the
where does the kiss between Brendan Fraser's character and his wife rank on the in the top kisses of all time list? Because it wasn't in the top five.
Well, I mean, no, it was not in the top five. But Rachel Weisz, really, she knew she had to be into it. If she wanted to have a career in movies, which she has had subsequently. So, you know,
against all odds,
you know, against all odds, and what she and Brendan Fraser's boundless, cinematic charisma was able to, lend to her in that role.
Fred Savage did more with his 5 minutes in this movie than the kid in The Mummy Returns did with his
Fred
entire
Savage
plot.
Fred Savage built an entire movie career out of this. Like, he went from being, yeah, just kid interacting with Peter Falk to getting a series based around him to now he's a freaking director.
Everything about this movie, fantasy or otherwise, and this includes the relationship between Fred Savage and Peter Falk's characters on screen, is incredibly believable. They do so much work to make you believe everything that they're selling, and it works so well because the movie setup is you've got this kid who's sick in bed. He's playing on his Commodore 64, some crappy baseball game. He's probably a stupid Cubs fan or something. Horrible.
Yeah, almost certainly. If he's got a Commodore 64 in 1987, he's got enough money. He is definitely a Cubs fan. Yeah,
and
we're getting class warfare.
And
here.
You said he's wearing a Refrigerator Perry jersey or what Bears?
No, that was he was wearing a Walter Payton jersey.
Walter Payton, okay.
You have to be wearing a Walter Payton.
Now, see, yeah, exactly. So, well, he could be. Refrigerator Perry was a Bear.
He was, and he was relevant. But Walter Payton was the heartbeat of the.
Okay. Well, anyway, so from the very beginning, the setup is classic, and it's everything about the way that the story unfolds is classic. There's no surprises. There's no major twists and turns along the way from a storytelling angle.
No,
just
it even kind of concedes that, like, at multiple points with the storytelling of, like, could you speed this up or whatever? Oh, yeah, they end up together, happily ever after. Oh, yeah. And they're going to be in love, and of course they end up together.
But wait, I want to hear the end.
But wait, you know, and yeah, it's like, wait, no, I want to hear all this. And like you said earlier about their interactions feeling genuine, you know, Fred Savage, he goes from being like, ooh, gross, kissing, to, oh, you know, I'm kind of into this.
Well, he's not necessarily into the kissing part, but he's invested in the entirety of what's happening.
He wants to hear all about the kiss at the end, and yes, that it's top, but it then blows away the top five
and left them all behind, I think is what he
left
said.
Them in the dust. Yeah. Yes.
Any other major points that you want to touch on before we talk about the movie and the arc that is going to emanate therefrom, the end of this wrestlers and movie arc to our next arc, because we have decided.
I think we can leave that there where we're at, because newsflash, Princess Bride is a great movie.
Yeah, it's freaking rules.
We're not being controversial.
No, it's not a hot take to say the Princess Bride is great. It's not a hot take to say that Jaws is great. The only thing that Princess Bride doesn't have is three sequels that should not have been made, which is the only thing that I would say gives Jaws the edge.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the Princess Bride does not have a Princess Bride 4 where the unnecessarily
Wesley,
large
what are we
rodents,
still doing here?
Yeah. are following them around the world. What are the names of the rodents in the fire swamp? They're the rodents of unusual size.
Yeah, rodents of unusual size.
They start following them around England and Ireland, stalking them.
Probably. I mean.
So we have we're probably going to leave it here or around here ish. We'll wrap it up. Good movie. Just go watch it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would expect most people, if they're listening to this, have almost certainly watched it previously.
I mean, again, don't listen to these shows if you haven't watched the movie, because we're jumping all around them.
Yeah, and we're not getting we're probably never going to be super into discussing like plot by plot synopsis type of stuff.
Like,
we do a little bit of that.
You don't need to do that,
but
really.
But yeah, we're just friends fast reacting to films, or fast reacting to films.
You're like furious that. Films. Don't say that word, because then we get the E tag, and then we'll never get any listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, people listen to E stuff.
Kids aren't allowed to listen to E stuff.
Well, that's kids. We're not after kids.
We just watched a kids movie.
Yeah, but
fun
kids
for the
aren't
whole
gonna watch
family.
Kids aren't watching this. They're watching the Minions and whatever dumb CGI AI whatever crap is being put out next.
So all of that to say, our next arc is Despicable Me 1, 2, and 3 and the Minions movie. No,
it is not.
No,
this was a film with a wrestler, but it is a film that also featured a trope.
Many tropes,
but a trope that I definitely, when I first saw it, I definitely felt that when that torture device went all the way up to 50 and Wesley got hit with it, that he was dead. I was sure he was dead.
You were sure when you first time you saw it, you're like, that dude is dead.
That dude is dead.
Even as the hero of the story, he's dead.
Yes.
Weak-minded six-year-old.
I probably. But in any case, our next arc is going to be films, or our next film arc, which we are already within.
Yes.
Is films with a character who you thought was dead, but really isn't.
Ooh, spooky.
And that is going to take us to a film which I know that you have not seen before.
Correct.
Actually, both of the other films in
both
this
films
arc.
I have not seen. However, we're not going to reveal the second one, because it's a big one, people.
It's a big one.
This is episode 9, so episode 11 is going to be a big one.
Yeah, but for episode 10 here, this is a big one, too.
That's true, but not as big.
Not as big.
Spoiler.
But born in 1999. We're going into The Matrix.
Is the name of the movie The Matrix? Is it Enter the Matrix?
No, it's The Matrix.
The Matrix, directed by the Wachowskis, as we are aware. A very culturally relevant film, which also got many bad sequels, is my understanding.
It did. I have not seen any of the sequels. And I'm pretty sure I've only seen The Matrix one time in the theaters.
Okay.
I mean, I saw bits of it on cable after that, but I never, like, stop to watch it.
This is another movie that is incredibly culturally relevant, has many touchstones.
Yeah, there's a lot of memes, and you know, for somebody who has, like yourself, who has not seen it before, I'm curious how much of a sense you have of the film.
Not much, apart from those memes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know what it means to be something pilled.
Yeah, yes.
And I know the sunglasses, and I know the scene where the dude is getting shot at, and, you know, he...
You know about knowing Kung Fu?
No.
Dude, you're going to learn about it.
I watched, let's see, I watched, what is that other movie with Keanu Reeves, post-apocalyptic or like a utopian...
Johnny Mnemonic?
Johnny Mnemonic. I did watch Johnny Mnemonic last year.
I've never seen that one.
It's bad.
I heard it was bad.
Don't watch Johnny Mnemonic.
Well, hot take. Sorry, Keanu Reeves fans.
I mean, has Keanu Reeves ever been in anything good other than this?
Other than The Matrix?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people who like...
He's in that new Aziz Ansari film.
There's a lot of people who like the John Wick movies.
probably won't be watching those anytime soon. Although you could make the argument that after the episode 11, our new arc after that, maybe we could watch a John Wick film. You're shaking your head.
I don't know. Oh. I have no idea what kind of arc we'll be on.
It's a mystery to all of us.
It is. We don't know where we're going, and that's part of the fun.
Yeah, it's like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory River. You don't know where we're going, and don't fall in or you'll get sucked up through a giant pipe.
Exactly.